Welcome to Energy Radio. This is episode 8 in season 2 of Energy Radio, where we talk about project development for your decarbonization projects. And I'm delighted to welcome Nicole Brunner from Enbridge Gas to the show today, and looking forward to our conversation. Nicole, welcome to Energy Radio.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Have you done podcasts before?
Absolutely not, no, but I'm excited to do this one.
Excellent. We're excited to have you as a guest. Tell us about yourself. Let's just jump right in. Tell me, and this is the first time we're meeting, so that's exciting. And then by extension, our listeners, tell us a bit about who you are and, you know, what brings you here today. That can be as long or as short as you'd like.
Okay. My name's Nicole Brunner. I'm the manager of new energy supply for Enbridge Gas, the utility in Ontario. I'm from Hamilton, Ontario, went to McMaster.
You did?
Yes.
No way. When did you graduate from McMaster, if I can ask?
About 2008.
Oh, no way. I'm an 09 grad. No way.
Very cool. Yeah.
Are you business?
Business, yes.
Okay. Yeah. So I would have graduated in 08, but I did the engineering and management program. So I got it's a business minor. So we were probably on the campus at the same time. That's cool.
Small world. Yeah.
Small world, right on. Yeah. We could probably connect some dots offline, but okay, cool.
Sure.
McMaster grad.
Yes.
Continue.
So at that time, had heard very little to nothing about the energy industry. In Hamilton, the hot topics are steel and healthcare, typically. Mm-hmm. But I was a pretty practical person at the time. The recession was looming, you probably remember. So I started looking into rail and energy as career paths that might be good places to just kind of wait out the recession and then do something a little bit more interesting afterwards was my plan. Union Gas at the time sent a couple recruiters to the campus, two women who pitched this cool energy transition that was happening where shale gas was starting to change the gas flows in North America. And it was just really exciting. It was cool that the industry had adapted and proved it was really agile. And they kind of alluded to this next energy transition coming. So they just sort of hooked me on the story of how exciting it could be to work in energy. And so now it's been 15 years, started at Union Gas, which then amalgamated and became part of Enbridge Gas. So I've been mostly in commercial roles dealing with North American natural gas flow dynamics, a bit of regulatory and finance positions, but definitely specializing on the commercial side, problem solving, business development. The two utilities merged in 2019, Union Gas and Enbridge, and I was the manager of gas supply commodity procurement at the time. So two really significant natural gas buying entities coming together. So I managed the buying group that that brought those two utilities together. That sort of led to this opportunity. So now I am managing just the new energy supply side of that. So the RNG, RSG, which is certified gas and hydrogen, and how we can use those to lower the emissions of the gas supply portfolio.
Cool. I'm just fixated on the fact that you didn't know about really energy, and yet you were successful getting a job out of school. And I knew I only wanted to be in the energy industry, and I couldn't get a job, you know, a year later. So kudos to you. I had to accept a job working for family, which I rejected the first time around and then subsequently accepted, and very grateful that I did. But kudos to you. And evidently, you didn't leave to find something that was more exciting. You stayed.
Oh. Yes. Here I am. Yes. Yep.
And so did you move, because Union has offices in Hamilton, but did you move to Chatham right away or eventually?
Yeah.
Or?
Yeah. The head office for Union Gas was in Chatham. So I moved here right out of school. I graduated on Thursday, moved over the weekend and started on Monday. Well, and I've been back, obviously, but not considered moving back there. Still very happy in Chatham.
Cool. I love it. So let's talk, maybe let's set that before we get into kind of the decarbonization piece, let's talk, and I'm going to ask maybe some questions personally out of my own ignorance, but let's talk about kind of on the bot, I think when most people think about Enbridge or Union, we think about kind of a meter outside of our facility. We think about Maybe we think about the pipes, you know, in the ground. I don't think we really think about the buying side. I don't think. Can you maybe just give us a couple minute crash course on, you know, where does the gas come from? Like, I think if I'm understanding you correctly, you were more on kind of the upstream buying side. Did I understand that right? Like, maybe set the table for us in terms of kind of how that. I'm not sure that was in your prep notes, so I'm throwing a curveball, but I think it's in your wheelhouse in terms of how does that whole, you know, market work?
Yeah, that's okay. It's a great lead-in. So Enbridge Gas were North America's largest gas utility by volume and third largest by customer count. Okay. So we have 3.9 million residential, commercial, industrial customers. And just to throw some numbers out there, so we distribute about 1,100 PJs of gas a year across Ontario, and we buy roughly half of that ourselves. So $530 billion PJs a year of gas that we buy. So we, because of our size, like, that much gas wouldn't be produced in any single location. So we are buying gas all across North America in many different liquid hubs and basins. And then we transport it back from, you know, the US Northeast, out west, the middle mid-continent, into Ontario to be consumed by our customers. So it's a couple billion dollars worth of supply a year, depending on the price of gas. It's a really significant part of Enbridge.
Wow. So PJ petajoule.
Petajoule, yep.
Just for those who haven't lived in that sphere of the world recently. So you talked about buying kind of half of what flows, you know, as an engineer, as a nerdy engineer, we live in a world of control volumes and what goes in, must go out. At the risk of asking a dumb question for myself and for the audience, why don't you buy all of the gas that goes in?
Not a dumb question at all. There's a lot of industrials and natural gas-fired power generation in Ontario. They buy their own gas. So they go buy it directly in the market, typically at Dawn in Ontario or at various upstream locations like us as well.
Okay. So to kind of repeat that back, so there are half of the gas that the consumers buy, they're buying it from you as somebody who moves it to their site, but also owns the gas and resells it to them. And the other half, they're still paying you to move the gas, but they're not buying the gas from you. They're buying it from somebody else who's moving it through your pipes. Is that right?
Exactly. Yeah. We call those direct purchase customers. So they're going directly to the market to buy the gas. We're distributing it to their businesses and just charging them for the distribution.
And is there any, you know, as we think of, you know, back to that nerdy control volume, is there any kind of storage that you, like, how much is it always what goes in must go out? You know, how does the storage piece fit into that from a natural gas infrastructure perspective?
Yeah, for sure. So Enbridge is in the enviable position of having Dawn storage right in Ontario. It's just outside of Sarnia. It's about 300 BCF or 300 PJs roughly of underground storage where you can store your natural gas. It's also a very liquid trading hub. So there's over 100 active counterparties at the Dawn Hub. They store their gas, trade it with different suppliers and producers and users, and then using the same upstream transportation paths that we use to bring gas to Ontario, you can access markets all across North America.
And you've mentioned the term liquid twice. You don't mean liquid in terms of a physical state. You mean liquid in terms of a market, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Like a commodity that's trading very liquidly.
Lots of buyers, lots of sellers.
Lots of buyers, lots of sellers.
Got it. Okay, cool. Awesome. So you come from that world of upstream buying, making sure you have enough gas to sell your customers. And is that just a matter of supplying, or is that a buy low, sell high kind of aspect of Enbridge's business?
Yeah, it's a bit of storage provides a bit of a natural hedge. So we do buy and store gas to make sure that we have gas in the ground for our customers to use. It's not really a buy low, sell high. It's not something Enbridge makes money on. We don't we don't buy gas at one price and sell it at another. We sell it across the costs across to our customers with no markup.
Got it. Cool. Awesome. That was the question I was asking. So that's great. So you spend time there and now you're moving to new energy, I think is what yes. Your email signature says, right?
That's fair.
So put some, I mean, we can go a bunch of different ways, and I'm sure you've heard all the, you know, lots of wisecracks about that. But what is that? What does new energy mean, you know, particularly, you know, specifically from your perspective? And then, you know, if it's different from Enbridge's perspective, but like, what does that mean, new energy?
Yeah, this is great. We're from totally different worlds. So that's a term that in my world refers to just ways to replace the natural gas that we use to serve the customers that buy their gas from us with lower carbon forms of energy. So renewable natural gas, hydrogen potentially, and certified gas, we call it, which is conventional natural gas that's just been certified to be a bit lower carbon or meet different standards.
Okay. And okay, so you're still on the upstream buying molecules to go into your infrastructure, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. So I'm buying the molecules, looking at some of the regulatory and policy aspects of these types of new energy. They're not, you know, immediately adopted, right? There are things that we need to apply to be able to buy and work with our regulator to be able to bring into our system.
Mm. Yeah, so there's a lot here we can unpack. So I guess I always start with why. So why, you know, why would Enbridge go and you know, create the role and have you lead it? And why would they get in the business of new energy in the first place?
Yeah, sure. So I want to just answer, like, because it's the right thing to do. We pass
okay,
all
well,
our
that
costs
was, that
on.
Was a good podcast,
yeah,
so sorry about
yeah
that.
No, exactly. So we pass all our costs on to our customers, as I shared. And, you know, those costs, because they're so large, the Ontario Energy Board regulates the costs based on some key principles. So they want our portfolio to be cost effective, guided by public policy, and then provide reliable and secure supply. And these new forms of energy, they are reliable, they're aligned with so much provincial and federal policy. But they're not required under any specific federal policy or provincial policy for that matter either. So because we know it's the right thing to do, Enbridge engaged Guidehouse, which is a third party, to look at different ways for Ontario to get to net zero and try and meet some of these public policy goals. And Guidehouse came back with a pathway to net zero study in September of this year. It was just recently updated as well. It was the first of its kind undertaken for Ontario, and it gave a few alternate paths for the province to get to net zero, and the associated costs and infrastructure needs to make sure we'd have a reliable and resilient energy source. And so the study found that to get to net zero by 2050 is possible, and it provided a bit of a breakdown of the different energy sources that we would use as a province if we were to achieve that goal through a diverse kind of pipes and wires approach, which was the most reliable and affordable method to get to net zero. And so because that study pointed to using these different types of energy, renewable natural gas and hydrogen specifically, this role is really putting that study's outcome into action for some of these energy types.
I love it. Yeah, and I think, you know, what I love about what Enbridge is doing is it gets at kind of how big the problem is. Like a lot of people will say, you know, we have to kind of decarbonize our energy sources, which we do, to be clear. But I think they think like we really have three stools to our energy infrastructure in kind of the developed world. One is, you know, the electricity system. The second one is what you folks do on, you know, the you know, gaseous kind of stationary uses. And then the third is, you know, mobile applications, which is typically liquid fuels, right? And so everybody's like, well, we got to electrify everything. Well, you want to take all three of those and, you know, put it onto it. Like, no, it's impossible to do that. We'd have brownouts and blackouts all over the place, right? So leveraging the existing infrastructure that we have, like what Enbridge has, you know, iron in the ground, it has to be part of the solution, right? So it's just so exciting that, you know, your role exists and other roles like it. And you're actually, you know, making stuff happen. So anyways, I need to get off my soapbox because you're really not me.
No, it's great.
I'm excited by it. So, and I had a question in there and now I've kind of forgot, but I guess to clarify, Enbridge doesn't, or Ontario, you know, doesn't have a mandate of X% flowing through the pipes needs to be, like, I think Quebec and BC and some of the states have that. But to be clear, Ontario and by extension, Enbridge does not have that mandate.
Exactly. Yeah, we don't have that mandate. So that has, you know, driven kind of this role in how we can make that happen and how we can decarbonize the supply without a specific mandate that's in place for the province. Versus, right, as you mentioned, Quebec and BC have 10% mandates at a minimum for some of their renewable content in their pipe.
So, you know, we over the 22 years of our firm have worked for a lot of, particularly the large industrial and many of the large institutional consumers. And, you know, they're all, the ones that are still in business are all good corporate stewards. But, you know, doing it for doing the right thing alone is not the only thing. Like, they need more than that to do it. Like, what else is driving, you know, the adoption of this more than doing the right thing? Is there an economic opportunity, or is there an economic kind of incentive, you know, either carrot or stick, that is in front of folks? Because you wouldn't be buying it if you didn't have somebody who was buying it from you, I don't think, right? So how does that whole kind of the economic piece of it work?
Yeah, so our plan is to sell it to those customers who get their gas from us, which are largely customers who are subject to the federal carbon charge. So residential, small commercial, industrial customers, but the smaller ones.
Okay.
And that's who we're proposing to go out and buy renewable natural gas for. So that pathway to net zero study, when it broke down the different sources of energy, when we get to that net zero state, 13% of Ontario's supply was to be met by RNG in 2050 and 4% by 2030. So what we've done is kind of taken that as a bit of a call to action. So we surveyed our customers that get their gas from us, those smaller customers, and we asked if they wanted the incremental cost of up to 8% at the time we asked, renewable natural gas in their supply with all of the incremental bill impacts, and received more than 50% support from customers that they wanted it in their pipe or wanted it in their supply. So we took that and the pathway to net zero results, and we've applied to the Ontario Energy Board to be able to go out and buy this gas and pay the premium associated with the gas and pass that cost along to our customers, just like we do the price of conventional natural gas.
So it's okay. So it's the market has told you we are prepared to pay a premium to decarbonize our gas supply. It's as simple as that.
It's as simple as that. Yep. And they, you know, being an RNG buyer is competitive, right? So another story is, and part of this is that we want to be able to get the most economic supply, including supply currently being produced within Ontario, for our customers. And that supply right now is being sold to other jurisdictions. We don't have access to it. Those other jurisdictions are seeing the benefit of the environmental attributes, reduced carbon charges on their bills. And Ontario has no opportunity right now to get in there and see those benefits.
Hmm. You mentioned the federal carbon charge a couple of times. So how does, if I'm a residential consumer of natural gas, which I am, I pay my Enbridge bill every month. I try to. And if I pay a premium for what I'm buying from you, how does that get negated by the reduction in the federal carbon charge?
Yeah, if we get approval from the Ontario Energy Board for what we have applied for, then we will charge the premium gas price for renewable natural gas. We'll reduce your federal carbon charge. It's not as much as the premium gas price. It doesn't completely offset it or anything like that. But by 2030, the price of carbon is $170 a ton, right? So you start to get a little bit closer to parity at that point. And just making sure that we have access to RNG supplies now means we don't have to go out and buy it in 2030 when the price may be higher.
Got it. Okay. And so where are you at in terms of, so you've put something, like I've been in biogas long enough to remember, I think at least one, I remember the first one, I kind of was not as involved, I think Enbridge and Union have gone twice to the OEB for something a little bit different, but somewhat related. But so you're in front of the OEB right now for this request?
Yeah, that's right. So we put a request in front of the Ontario Energy Board. We filed it at the end of October last year. Okay. We want to buy 1% of our supply as low carbon energy, primarily RNG right now. starting in 2025. We're going to increase it by a percent each year till we get to that magic 4% number by 2028. That proceeding is in front of the OEB. Right now, the discussion is just on energy transition in general. The RNG piece will kick off a little bit heavier in the fall, and likely by Q1 next year, we'll have a pretty good feel of whether or not this is something that's going to go forward.
Wow. Okay. So so within a year, we should know 1% in 2025 up to 4%. What is that, you know, we talked about PJs. Like, what does that mean in terms of actual volumes for your system?
Yeah, so it's about 22 PJs of supply when we get to that 4%, just over 5 PJs a year for the 1% of supply that will increase. It's a really significant portion if you think about how much RNG is out in the market right now. So it will drive development, for sure, of renewable natural gas. It will drive opportunities and economic development within the province and potentially imports from other locations where we'll buy RNG as well.
Wow. That's massive. That's really, really good. Too early to ask you, you know, what you think the chances are probably on the, I mean, it's a lot of work to go to the OEB. I mean, you wouldn't go if you didn't like your chances, I would imagine.
I agree. But I think if you think about what our ask is, it's really reasonable given our size. Right. Our customers want it. RNG makes sense. Like you said, it leverages existing assets that are in the ground. And it's aligned with a lot of the Ontario and federal emission reductions goals. So I'm pretty optimistic that that logic will prevail and we'll be able to start buying for the province just in alignment with those provincial goals is kind of a key message, right? Ontario needs access to this market now, or too much time will pass. We will fall behind other provinces, we'll fall behind other jurisdictions. And so we urgently need to be able to get out there and start buying. And this is our turning point and our opportunity to be able to do that.
I love it. Yeah. And you're right. You made reference to it a minute ago. Like there's a lot of, there's definitely some RNG happening in Ontario. And it's not, you know, it's leaving Ontario. I mean, the molecules likely stay in Ontario, but what the attributes and the benefit of that is accruing to other jurisdictions, right? And I mean, it is what it is. Those projects have happened, and I'm glad they're happening. But I love it. I get it. Let's make sure we can keep that gas, you know, and those attributes in Ontario and drive an Ontario market, right? So
yeah, exactly. Yeah. And the concept of a market's really interesting, right? There's a bit of a community building within Ontario, or that's, you know, continuing to grow within Ontario right now, of renewable natural gas producers and buyers who want to meet up, and they want to have, you know, access to supply and have that demand be able to be met from locally sourced supply, or supply that, you know, can be brought in at a reasonable cost. And this ask should help to facilitate those types of connections and build the market for renewable natural gas at that Dawn hub that we talked about.
I love it. That's very, very exciting. And so when we talk about the market, I mean, are we buying kind of the same, like, what are you looking to buy? We've talked about RNG. I think you talked about RSG. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't have an energy conversation these days without talking about hydrogen. I mean, walk me through kind of what you're hoping to buy, you know, from the market. And do you look at those? Are you looking to buy multiple things, and do you look at them differently?
Yeah. So just like we do with our conventional natural gas, Enbridge we're large, so we're going to seek a very diverse portfolio. We're going to start with all different types of renewable natural gas would be the plan. Likely do a large RFP and try and source supply from different geographic regions, different types and different sources of RNG with different carbon intensity scores.
Okay.
And different price points. We haven't asked for a specific price point. We've asked for a rate impact, which gives us that flexibility and really provides the most opportunity for customers. And then I think as time goes on, hydrogen becomes part of the mix there. But in the current state, it's just not quite there.
Yeah. And I think, you know, hydrogen is not there for a bunch of reasons. One, I mean, hydrogen is there, you know, I don't want to misrepresent hydrogen, big fans of hydrogen. But I think when you're trying to put it in the pipe, like it's a different molecule, right? Like it's fundamentally, it may have the same environmental attributes, but it's a different molecule. And from a, you know, with my engineering hat on, that's different. That's hard, right? Like it's, you know, we got to figure that piece out, and I'm not sure we're there yet, right?
Yeah, it's definitely different. Enbridge does have a blending facility in Markham that I'm sure you've heard about. So we do buy a very small quantity of hydrogen because it's a pilot program. We're not paying a market price for that hydrogen. We're just paying the equivalent to the conventional natural gas price in energy for that volume. So also in our same application, there's an ask to study our system and see where hydrogen might be a good fit. And I think when that study's complete, maybe there'll be a few more opportunities for us to blend hydrogen and use it as part of this low carbon energy procurement that we're after as well.
I love it. So going back to, you know, the different types of RNG, you mentioned carbon intensity score, and you mentioned, you know, kind of not a fixed price. Does that imply that you're giving credit to different RNG sources as it relates to a CI score, and then, you know, factoring that towards its impact on the rate? Like, you're not looking at all RNGs as created equal. Is that right?
I think it will come down to, you know, the same gas supply principles of cost effective and diverse and reliable supply. But where carbon intensity will come into play is that it will impact the amount of clean fuel regulation credits that you're able to generate. So where the carbon intensity may become a more economic solution is if a gas is negative CI enough to generate some clean fuel regulation credits, we can sell those and use the revenue to offset some of the premium costs that you'll pay for that higher quality RNG.
Okay. So you could buy lower CI gas, and, you know, whatever is beyond what you need to pass on to your customer base, you can take that and sell that to subsidize the higher price.
Yeah, to sell the credits that it would generate and subsidize the higher price. Exactly. Yeah. And that lower CI gas will generate more credits than, you know, a mid-range CI gas.
Got it. Okay. Yeah, I spent most of my time in the Thode library, so all this market stuff, I didn't quite grasp it all.
I like it.
Yeah. You mentioned I think you said RNG, and then you had something called RSG or NS. That was a new term to me.
Yeah, that's okay. It's new to a lot of people, but it is a trend that's been kind of emerging over the conventional natural gas space for the last few years. So this is gas that is conventional gas, so fossil source gas, that has been certified that it meets certain requirements in production. And those requirements typically are a maximum methane emissions leak rate at the time of production. So, you know, when you produce natural gas, sometimes, you know, a percent or more of the gas is released into the atmosphere as methane. However, this certified natural gas, there's caps on how much is released, along with other ESG attributes that are required as well. But that certified gas provides another opportunity for Enbridge and utilities to just push the industry in the right direction, the production sources in the right direction, to make sure that the product that we're selling to customers is as transparent and potentially, you know, a lower emission quality, lower emission profile than other conventional gas.
Okay, so the baseline is conventional gas, and even though this RSG is still fossil based, it's an improvement from the baseline, and, you know, we gotta pursue every opportunity for incremental improvement that we can.
Yeah, potentially. Exactly. And if any conventional natural gas is purchased today, you know, to have a lower methane emissions leak rate at the production source is an immediate win, right? Versus the development of an RNG project that could take a year or more.
Yeah, and I think it's a good example of how nuanced, you know, this space is, right? Like, because I think somebody who, you know, take me, for example, you know, 2 minutes ago, it's like, well, it's fossil gas. Like, but no, hold on. We have a big problem. And so we have to pursue any improvement we can. And this is an improvement from the baseline. And so, you know, yes, it's not, you know, wind and solar, you know, powering your EV or your electric, you know, home hot water heater, but it's better than where we are today, right? And we have to be, you know, excited and pushing for those marginal improvements, because we're going to move forward based on marginal improvements, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it uses, you know, your furnace that you have in place today, the production wells that we have in place today, all of the infrastructure that we have in place today. So it's just an immediate opportunity, at least for transparency, if not for reductions in emissions.
So I want to talk in a minute about kind of project development and, you know, what Enbridge's message to project developers might be. But before we do that, is there anything else around, you know, what Enbridge is working on right now or what you are working on in your role that we haven't kind of touched on? I know we haven't followed our prep notes very linear. So I'm not sure. I want to make sure we didn't miss anything around kind of what you are working on and what's important for the listeners to hear.
Yeah, I think, like, if I had a key message, I think that we're at a bit of a turning point here for the Ontario energy supply. I know the commodity market is different than the conventional natural gas supply and not something that people are in every day. But as this renewable natural gas market moves and develops really quickly, Ontario has no place in it at this point until we get some sort of opportunity to recover these costs. So if you're interested in Ontario energy and you are interested in some of the more technical aspects, this is a really key component to start to turn your mind to. And the regulatory proceeding that we're about to go through is really where it will take center stage. So there are a few RNG coalitions and the Canadian Biogas Association are interveners. There are ways to stay in the loop. And you're also always welcome to reach out to Enbridge or look at the Ontario Energy Board website if you want to learn more or potentially support in some way.
It says here in the notes, are you on the CBA board?
I am on the CBA board, yes.
Hey,
yes.
So you get the chance to work with Jennifer Green?
I do, yes. That's a very energized and passionate organization right now that's really, you know, fueling a lot of excitement in the province. It's a very exciting time to be part of it.
So I was a board member in 2011, 2012, I think maybe 2013. Anyways, and that was when Jennifer was just kind of, you know, encouraging us to think nationally. And you know, I didn't get a chance to go to the show in April, but I was at the one, you know, I think last April, and I just said to her, like, compared to, you know, it was 30 farmers and a whole bunch of vendors, you know, 10 years ago to what the industry is. And obviously it's not just her, but you know, it's folks like yourself and others who have really pushed that. But it's just, you know, and now I sound like a, you know, an old person, but you know, just to see the arc of the industry and how it's really grown, it's amazing. It's really, really cool. So thank you.
Established, we graduated the same year though, so don't call yourself an old person because you're but yes, I agree, the passion and the energy that's there right now, and the biogas show in April was phenomenal. It was a really, really good 3 days and a really good community sense within the province.
To clarify, I graduated a year after you. Okay. But I said I sound like an old person. And it took me 5 years to graduate. You probably did it in four. So anyways, moving on. So if I'm a project developer and I have a vision to develop a project or multiple projects, you know, you've vocalized that, you know, that you're gonna, once this is approved, you're going to have a big need. Like what, you know, obviously you can't, we don't know how it's going to end up, but I mean, what should project developers, obviously they should be, you know, supporting the CBA or the RNG coalition from an intervening perspective. But what other, you know, things, you know, should they be talking to Enbridge? Is it too early for that? Is it like, if you have projects in early stage, like what's your advice or recommendations for developers of projects?
Yeah, so we've started some early conversations with potential project developers or producers who are active in the market right now. We're happy to start talking about potential. We aren't in the market to be buying at this point. We do hear a lot from industrial customers and from other customers who are interested in buying renewable natural gas at dawn, so happy to make some connections and to help kind of grow that dawn market. But for producers, you know, I think there's a lot to be said for some of the challenges that producers are having right now in getting online and in receiving all the funding that they need. And I think demand side incentives like this are just as important as the supply side incentives that they're seeking. And I think there's a, you know, there's a win-win here if we're able to help each other get to this point where supply is developing and can be developed through bilateral deals or through large RFPs that utilities are serving. I think we all have the same end goal of lowering emissions, and both sides of that incentive profile are really required.
Yeah, I mean, it gets to what's your offtake price as a developer, right? Like, you know, you need, okay, so you can get, you know, maybe you can get investment tax credits, you know, maybe you can get some other advantages, but if you can't sell it into a liquid market at a favorable, you know, price, then what's the point, right? So, and that's really what Enbridge is creating, right? You're, you know, and the more people who are buying, you know, the more the price is going to, you know, be driven up. I mean, that's just, you know, even I learned that at McMaster's
economics.
So, in economics, yeah.
I think, like, to your point, Dawn is really ready to support that growing RNG market. We have storage services, we have balancing services, we have services to help producers get their gas to Dawn, and growing that transparent, slightly more liquid market, getting it, we won't get to where conventional natural gas is anytime soon, but getting in that direction is something that Enbridge is trying to help both sides with. And the access that producers can get from Dawn to all different markets across North America is unique and provides a lot of opportunity that we're happy to talk to producers about as well.
Right. Okay, cool. And do you have a sense as you look ahead, maybe it's too early, but you know, I think you're going to be looking to buy at a kind of fixed price over a term from a supplier. That's going to be your preference in terms of how you procure the gas.
Yeah, potentially. I think we're going to be pretty flexible in working with suppliers and trying to come up with different terms or different opportunities to try and meet their needs. We have suppliers and producers who've shared that they're interested in that standard kind of long-term utility contract where potentially a lower price is available. And I think that that's how deals have been developing to date. We're happy to enter into those conversations, and pending approval and RFP, that may be something that we'd look for. But we're also open if producers are up to look for something more flexible. Within the province of Ontario, there's conventional natural gas that's produced right now. And we have a gas purchase agreement with those producers where we pay them an index rate for supply. So at any given point, they have a no nomination service where they're able to inject their gas right into Dawn, their fossil gas, or sorry, right into our system. And they're given the Dawn price for that gas. There's no nomination, no scheduling required, no balancing. It's very producer friendly. And we'd look to mimic that for the renewable natural gas market as well.
Okay. Wow. So as you look, kind of, as we kind of wrap up here, as you look forward, you know, a couple of years, you're, let's just say, you know, that the OEB approves what you're looking for, and you're maybe in 2025 when you're supposed to be starting to buy. I mean, what's, obviously we got to get through the biggest hurdle right now is the OEB approval. But after that, what do you see as kind of the main one or two hurdles that'll be facing, you know, you and your role and more broadly the industry?
That's a good one. I think, you know, these bilateral deals that are shaping up, making sure that we can get a foothold into those types of arrangements early. So for 2025 will be key. So I think getting that first tranche of supply will be a hurdle to work through, but something that I think Enbridge is excited to be part of and that we think is manageable, especially given our timing, if we can get in sooner rather than later. And then I think another big hurdle the industry is going to, you know, push through and will potentially work through is just the different policies that surround renewable natural gas and the environmental attributes and the credits that come with it. You know, how is the molecule tracked? How is the molecule, how is the environmental attribute traded and tracked? And I think, you know, there are other models out there that we can mimic and we can learn and grow with. But right now, I think it's just a little bit up in the air where things are going to land. So it's just going to be something that we work through, I think.
Isn't the answer just blockchain? Isn't that the answer?
Yeah, maybe. Or booking claim, I think.
Right. Yeah, and that's another area of the world that I don't profess to really understand. But yeah, you know, those are definitely the next stage. And I, you know, from a buy sell perspective with the developers, like, you know, I can see that being a, like, from an Enbridge perspective, you can't, you know, really be going out and buying stuff, but you're going to need it at some point in the next 2 years. You know, conversely, if I'm a developer, it takes me 2 years to develop my project and build it. and I need some certainty before I'm going to commit to this. So there's a bit of a, you know, a chicken and egg, you know, kind of standoff that, you know, may, and that's maybe a challenge for you, because those people who want to develop projects, if they call Enbridge and Enbridge says, you know, we want to, but we can't, and then they call some other jurisdiction, and maybe that's what you've been voicing as we've been talking, like they call another jurisdiction, and it's like, yeah, you can, we'll buy it, right? Like the projects that are in development now that might be ready in 2025, you know, that it might be a challenge to lock those in, you know, before you have your decision, right?
Yes, you have nailed a problem that we're going to face for sure. But I think, you know, we'll have about a year's lead time, hopefully, in order to be able to begin having delivery of supply. There's some projects that are, you know, started, some producers that have contracts that aren't 100% sold, that have opportunities that they've shared with us. So hopefully we're able to get some supply flowing in time and meet that 2025 goal of 1%.
Yeah, right on. Cool. Well, Nicole, this has been really helpful. Is there anything else we, you know, you need our listeners to hear or we haven't talked about in terms of, you know, your role and new energy and what that means for Enbridge?
No, I think we covered it. And I think you officially can say that you are a commodity buying expert as well. Now you've repeated everything back perfectly. You're totally good.
I can say that perhaps if I remember it all tomorrow. You know, that's the key. But and Nicole, this has been great. And if I'm an expert, it's because you've been a good teacher. But where can people find you? What's the best way if people want to reach out and kind of support the application to the OEB, or, you know, start to socialize some conversations about, you know, selling gas? You know, is LinkedIn the best way to connect with you, or what's the best way to get a hold of you?
LinkedIn's great. There's also just the most simple email address ever. It's just rng@enbridge.com.
No way. rng@enbridge.com.
Yeah. Doesn't go directly to me. It goes to a whole group of people, but they filter and they share it with me as appropriate. But yes, that's not my personal email as much as I would prefer it to be.
That's helpful though. That's good. People can reach out. Awesome.
Yes. Thank you.
Well, Nicole, thank you so much for joining us today and really, really good discussion about a piece of the market that, no, I personally wasn't, you know, as up to speed on, and now I am, and our listeners are as well. So thank you for your time.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Love it. And to our listeners, thank you for tuning in to this episode of Energy Radio. Hopefully you've learned a thing or two. And until next time, focus on how we build a more functional world together. Thank you.